Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, everyone, wherever and whenever you may be listening to us in this great wide world brought together by the internet. We are the last three guys to do a podcast. John Morgo, Daniel Bolton, Leon Brown back again. We were with you on Saturday. Hope you had a chance to catch us from Fifth Third Bank Stadium in Kennesaw State, where Reinhardt Eagles played the Kennesaw State Owls. We called that game, and it was, and while we kind of had Leon on for our first game a little maybe a month earlier, we had some technical issues with that one. This one, we can't, even though there were technical issues at the start of it, this one, this broadcast came out perfectly, at least the sound quality anyway. If you're a Reinhardt fan, it didn't come out that perfect. 31-7 Eagle victory in a game, well, let's put it this way, we called 60% of a college football game. It was halted by lightning and rain with about 5:45 remaining in the third quarter, right after a big interception by Trey Teasley. And that's when it was called. The field became a lake, especially the 30s. Not only was there thunder and lightning, also a torrential rainstorm hit. And I think we must have gotten at least 2 to 3 inches in about an hour. So that was why that. But before we get started, Leon, I want to get your impressions. You finally got to call college football. This one was there. It counted. It actually came out pretty well quality-wise. What did you think about all that?
Well, and looking at Reinhardt and Kennesaw, it seems that Reinhardt started the game out with a lot of butterflies.
Yeah.
You know, as far as, I don't want to call it, I don't want to use the terminology shell shock,
mm-hmm.
but that's what it looked like about the first quarter and a half.
Right.
They seemed to get their wits about themselves during a 2-minute drill of the second quarter,
mm-hmm.
in which we've seen the offensive coordinator just kind of take chains off Billy Hall and allowed him to start airing the football out and met with success with ending the drive with a nice 85-yard, you know, semi-professional drive.
Right.
That ended with a little controversy, but it ended in Reinhardt's favor with them scoring and then to start the second half with an interception, you know, intercepting a power. I mean, we're talking about a big 297-pound defensive lineman gains the interception and gets yards after the interception. I mean, it seemed that Reinhardt, you know, didn't show any type of fear. And watching that, I was like, you know, it's like Reinhardt was like the microcosm of my situation with commentating, so to speak, you know.
Right.
Started off a little bit of butterflies, got the butterflies out, and got back to business. So it was a very enjoyable understanding. I kind of see myself in a lot of Reinhardt.
That's a pretty good analogy, Leon, in terms of what, as I said, it was, you know, Daniel and I were kind of old hats at this, and we're just bringing you aboard, and I kind of like seeing the development through your eyes in terms of being brought into this kind of strange little world. And yes, I would have liked to see Reinhardt finish the game out just to see what developments they had, because again, the clock was really on their side. The momentum was on their side, especially with that Teasley interception. Billy Hall would get the offense back on at about the 45-40, couple quick strikes. Yeah, they could have gotten in the end zone, made it 31-14, and then things could have gotten a little interesting. But really, that rainstorm, I don't understand why. Yeah, I understand.
It was like a lot like David and Goliath. You know, they were essentially two power running teams.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, let's be honest. You know, Kennesaw State, from the looks of things, just had better athletes.
Right.
You know, I'm saying this the way that attack the edges consistently. I mean, their playbook was so transparent. It's like, you know what's going to happen. It's all about being stopped.
Right.
You know, but
exactly.
At the end of the day, Reinhardt, they didn't back down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they didn't just pack it in. I don't like the fact that Thomas had 6 minutes to take it off the game.
That was an interesting call. Both coaches, I think, well, from what we were told, both coaches agreed to this, and there was a variety of reasons. I think one was the approaching weather. Two was the fact that Reinhardt really didn't have much depth, especially along the lines, and they were just trying to prevent injuries. But I think the weather was a part of it. If It was fine. I mean, it was really weird because here we are late fall, we're still getting, or early fall, we're still getting the pop-up thunderstorms. And again, that thunderstorm that just deluged Fifth Third Stadium came really out of nowhere. But yeah, so it was an interesting performance. I'm going to be very curious to see where Reinhardt sits in the NAIA top 25. When that gets released tomorrow, they did come in at 14 after their loss to Kaiser. This will be the first two-game losing streak in about 5 years for the Eagles. Again, this is a team I wouldn't knock them down because the way I see it, you're supposed to lose to an FCS team, and at least Reinhardt scored, which is something that point a little bit earlier did not do. I mean, if I knock them down, it only me 15 or 16, and I would not knock them any further down than that. So we'll see how Reinhardt hits that 14 again. They're going to start the conference schedule, the divisional schedule, next week up at Kentucky Christian before coming home and playing Bluefield in Ken White Field at University Stadium in 2 weeks. So that's interesting. So Daniel, what did you take away from that game?
Well, for one, going back to our broadcast booth, I had so much fun.
Yes.
With the two of you. Of course, John, you and I have done this for years, and it's always a fun ride with you. But adding that third guy and the element that Leon brings to the broadcasting table, that third guy element, quote unquote.
Yes.
I thought he did a tremendous job, and you said it when we was walking towards the car. Headed back to studio, you said that, man, you know, you two compliment each other.
Right.
Like it's, and but that's what you have to have when it's coming on the broadcast. So kudos to you two for actually making it easy for me.
Right.
Because if I don't have one of the best play by play announcers in the nation, to me, yeah, I said it, John.
Stop.
I said it.
Stop.
And the new guy who's just never done it before, and he comes out and he just blazes saddles. I mean, it makes my job easy.
Right.
Now to the game itself, I think that, guys, it was something that we expected.
Oh yes.
Kennesaw's athletes were just too much, and you can kind of see it on that first possession. But it was like I said, Reinhardt had to come out and smack them in the mouth. But, I mean, it's hard to do that when you have an offensive line that's beaten up and just kind of, I wouldn't say thrown together because of injuries, but modified, basically, because of the injury. So they're missing a lot of depth. You had two guys on that line that had ACL tears. So you're going to have that. And it starts up front, like Leon had mentioned yesterday. It really starts in the trenches for them. That first series, they got off the field and they got off quick. And then the punt only went 20 yards, I believe. So
yeah, the shank.
And now Kennesaw has a short field, and of course they can run the football. So it was just a lot of that happened. Of course, there was a takeaway, of course. And the takeaway was, you know, a good thing for Reinhardt is that Billy Hall made some good plays. He made some great plays, especially at the end of that half, at the end of the first half. He made some tremendous plays, including that 21-yard touchdown run that he got, where that was actually challenged. So, Reinhardt has struggled the last 2 weeks. Of course, they struggled against Kaiser last weekend. Offensively, I think this really got their motor going. Maybe there might be a change in Coach Miller's philosophy, a little bit more of a spread, because I thought they did a great job when they spread the court, when they spread the field out. Billy Hall can make the throws if you allow him to, and he can use his legs if needed. So this was a good win, and I think Reinhardt's in the right direction. And to your point, John, as far as them falling in the rankings, it shouldn't fall that far. They lost to the number 4 ranked team in the nation in FCS play.
Exactly.
So they shouldn't fall that far.
Exactly. To quote Dennis Green, they were what we thought they were in terms of Kennesaw State. Also, to your point, Billy Hall's got to get more of a rushing attack not centered around him. He cannot be the leading rusher going forward. Especially with the wing T offense, with all the backs coming at you, Mosley, Kane, McCollum, Lanier, and all those stables that he's got. And to be honest, Devin Collins, Terry Burton, Bryce Burgess, he's got to get somebody going. And I think a lot of it is due to the fact that maybe one of those rushers hasn't been able to kind of take over the offense. I think a lot of people are keying on Mosley, and it's just a matter of trying to get the fullbacks going, because I think Treve Kane might have had the longest run from scrimmage by not a quarterback, by not Billy Hall. If you take Billy Hall out of the equation, Kane, I think, had the longest run from scrimmage, and that was that 7 yards he had in the first series, in the first downs of that.
Right. John, if you're a team that relies on the pass and your tight ends and running backs are catching touchdown passes and not your receivers.
Exactly.
And that would be a problem.
Right.
Yes, especially if Billy Hall just being between 175 and 185 pounds. I mean, I don't want to jinx the man, but it's just a matter of time before the wrong thing happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he's out there taking on fearlessly at that linebackers.
Yeah,
and I just fear for that man. I'm like, he took the hit. I think he took the hit last night, where he did a 360 when he was touched.
That was a touchdown play where he took off at about the four, I think, and he angled his body so he was parallel to the goal line, so his whole body was shooting across, and that allowed him to get the touchdown. And it was a great feat of proportion for him to angle himself like that as he was flying through the air. And that was kind of, well, interesting, because again, that they had to do the replay on it, and it was an ESPN3 broadcast, ESPN Plus broadcast, so they had replay capabilities, and the booth was right next door to us. It was on our left. So, and yes, it was closed off by blinds, but there was like a little 6 inches separating the blind from the bottom of the window, and we could actually see into that booth. And they were just going frame by frame watching to see where that ball broke the plane, and if it did so before Billy Hall either knee or elbow went down, and he did get in, so he got the touchdown. But that was kind of an interesting little moment, and it just kind of made it a lot more surreal in terms of where we were.
Eventually, the way Billy Hall is going, he's going to need a stun double.
Yes, yes, and you're right. But again, Leon, to your point, we're not going to see another line like Kennesaw's the rest of the year.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, we're going to be back in the NAIA, so not discounting some of these lines that we're going to see, but, I mean, I was mentioning the Union game, because they were playing Cumberland's, and Cumberland's had like a 28-0 lead at the first quarter. The final of that ball game was 96-0.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I told you, Leon. Like, we're used to seeing Reinhardt games and all of that, where I have to have two sheets. And I'm talking about just two scoring sheets.
Yes.
Like, that's how bad they can beat people.
Yes.
They're capable of that.
And, guys, I think Union is coming to Reinhardt the last 2 weeks of the regular season. It's either the last game or the second to last game, one of those two.
Okay.
So you might have to. So if you do make it out for that, Daniel, you might need three sheets for that one.
yeah.
So anyway, guys, yes, it was a fun experience. Hopefully we'll get to do it again sometime soon. We do have a couple of opportunities. Of course, the Point game coming up in 3 weeks down in Alabama, just over the Chattahoochee River from Columbus. That is a possibility. And, of course, we've got Bluefield in 2 weeks. But couple of interesting things from the college football Saturday, things that kind of flew under the radar. Georgia Tech lost to Temple. I think a lot of us picked Temple in this ball game, but I don't think any one of us could have foresaw that Georgia Tech would just do a safety dance and that's it. 24-2 lost to Temple. We knew there would be growing pains as Georgia Tech under Jeff Collins moves to an offense that resembles something this century. But I don't think anyone expect. I think a 24-2 people are like, okay, it can't stay this bad, especially as we head into the crux of ACC play. So, what do you think Georgia Tech, I mean, is it going to get worse for the Jackets before it gets any better?
It was just a bad day for the ACC, period.
Well,
Except for Florida State,
yes. And Notre Dame for some purposes. They did have that great game against Virginia. And that's another thing, guys. We watched that Clemson game. We watched that Clemson North Carolina game on our wonderful monitor that we had available. And I think I said that Clemson was not going to get number one. They were going to drop from number one, especially in terms of what Alabama wound up doing to Ole Miss. And sure enough, that's what happened. Alabama, your new number one team. Clemson drops to number two. Clemson's coming out of the ACC. There's no question of that. But I think, once again, top to bottom, SEC is better than the ACC.
Yeah, absolutely, without question. I mean, when I look at the ACC, there are a couple of good teams. Like, behind Clemson in the Atlantic is Wake Forest. A lot of people are not seeing that.
Wake Forest,
they're 5-0, should be ranked. Yeah, they should be ranked. I don't know why they're not.
Because,
and right behind them is Florida State at 2-1.
I'll tell you why Wake Forest is ranked, because they've got a history of as being Wake Forest, a team that hasn't contended.
Yeah, that's right.
A team that hasn't contended or been a major power in football since Arnold Palmer went to Wake Forest. So,
oh my goodness.
I think he went there. So, you know,
Yeah, he did.
Okay. So, you know, so I think Wake Forest has that going against them. But if they keep winning, you cannot discount the Demon Deacons for much longer. Again, Georgia did not play this week. They'll be on the road against Tennessee. So really, also Georgia State out as well. So really, in terms of Georgia football, it was just the Kennesaw State and the Georgia Tech game, and they were playing in Philadelphia. So really, college-wise, in the Peach State, not much going on. And that's why I think guys, I'm really not hearing too much about Georgia Tech. I think for this week anyway, because I think Atlanta is and Atlanta's always been this way. I've made this point probably to you guys once before, that Atlanta is the world's biggest college town. The problem is the college is an hour to the east of here.
Oh, you got to put it like that.
This is a city that lives and dies with the Georgia Bulldogs. And Georgia Tech right now is an afterthought, and I don't know when the Jackets will get relevance back. I mean, they're going to.
But you know what? You look at their schedule, guys, and there's hard for me to see a victory. They might not get another win until they play Virginia Tech at home, which is November 16th. But in between that time, they're going to have a North Carolina team that let that game slip away from them Saturday night against Clemson. They're going to be mad next week.
Mad, yes.
Exactly. At Duke. That is not an easy game. Duke is okay, but I think that they're a little bit better than Georgia Tech. Then they're at Miami. Miami's mad from last year, if I'm not mistaken. I think Miami lost to Georgia Tech last year, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
So Miami's going to come in upset. They're going to come in mad. Pitt is one of those up-and-down teams. You never know what you're going to get, but I can – if I had to pick, maybe the Pitt game might be the game that they can get.
Well,
But at Virginia, they're not going to win at Virginia. No. They're not going to win that game at all.
I think Pittsburgh has the thanks and appreciation of a nation for beating Central Florida. So we don't have to go through another. We don't have to go through a third winter of Central Florida should play for the national title. Thank you, Pitt, for keeping those guys quiet. Appreciate that. Now the only controversy will be Alabama and Clemson. Yeah, go ahead.
And the thing about that is, I didn't really think that. I thought UCF was going to slip up on their schedule. I didn't know where. I thought it might have been in their conference play. Mm-hmm. I thought it might have been in their American, but it actually wasn't. So that's a good thing. Yeah. But they still slipped up against Pitt. I always thought that Boise State was going to be the higher-ranked team that was going to get that New Year's Six game anyway.
Yeah, I thought they were going to lose to Stanford. I thought that was going to be their slippery game. But
that's true.
They beat the Cardinal. But Pitt, again, grateful for a nation for knocking them down and basically keeping them quiet. But back to where we were saying about Georgia Tech. Yeah, Daniel, you are right. And, of course, they end with Georgia. That's just going to be, oh, man, yeah, that's going to be ugly.
Don't get ugly.
That's going to be extremely ugly. So yeah, Georgia, I mean.
Real bad.
So they may go 0 for the ACC, or at least 1 or 2, no more than 2. And it's just going to be another quiet season on the flats. We knew this was going to happen, but Jeff Collins has got to be able – the key for Jeff Collins, he's got to recruit. He's got to make a splash with this 2020 class that he's going to bring into to Atlanta in December and February. He's got to get some good recruits, some people that he can build on as he does bring his new system in. Again, it's going to be a process. It's going to be a long process moving, as I mentioned, Georgia Tech into this century. But they've got to give him some time. They got to get those growing pains taken care of. And who knows, maybe 2-3 years, maybe next season we hope for like 4 or 5 wins, maybe 1 or 2 more wins in the conference before 2021, 2022. And maybe that's the year that Georgia Tech can take a step up in the ACC and be that second team from behind Clemson. Because, guys, as long as Clemson just keeps – well, if Clemson keeps winning, yes, they're going to get the recruits. But, boy, Clemson, I saw this on my Twitter, and a lot of the complaints about Clemson is they play down to the level of the opponent. And that, when you do that, you kind of lack like a killer instinct, I think, at times. I mean, Alabama's just going to play hard, physical, fast, no matter who they play. And they're going to keep playing that for 60 minutes. Clemson just tend to coast for stretches.
I think it's out of boredom.
Yeah.
I think, you know, this right here, what we seen yesterday was, you know, it's kind of like you spot your little brother about, you know, you're playing a game to 28, you spot your little brother 25 points out of sheer arrogance.
Right.
And, you know, North Carolina almost walked away. I mean, we almost seen the largest upset we've seen in a couple of years.
Yes. And like you said, North Carolina had a chance. They were going for a 2-point conversion, and which I guess you have to do that. No, let's see. You play for a tie on the road. You go for 2 at home. I think that's the adage. So, I mean, they were going for 2. They were going to try to win it all, rolling the dice, and Clemson give them credit for stopping it. But yeah, North Carolina definitely rolled on that one, rolled the dice, and it's just a shame that it did not happen.
You know what's funny about Clemson? What? The funny part about Clemson is we talk about how they've been coasting and how they really haven't been playing well. But if you look at their scores, the scores don't depict it. But and I think it's probably the level of competition that they played. Georgia Tech, they win 52-14. Mm-hmm. Texas A&M, which was their test, their battle test, 24-10. They struggled early against at Syracuse, 41-6. They take on Charlotte, okay, 52-10. And then their first boat test, which was at North Carolina, a team that's still trying to figure some things out under Mac Brown.
Mm-hmm.
If North Carolina makes a 2-point conversion, they lose that game.
Yep.
Well, in 2 weeks, they better watch themselves because Florida State's coming to town. And I'm not saying, you know, Florida State's always a tough challenge, no matter what kind of team they have. Well, I think that'll be their real true tester in the ACC. It's always their measuring stick.
Okay.
Oh, there's definitely blood in the water. If you're anybody who's playing Clemson, they're not invincible, as we've seen.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we're not the only ones who feel they're not invincible. The powers that be came to that conclusion as well, too.
Right, putting Alabama in front.
Absolutely. Yeah, they're really number one. Like, you guys aren't who we thought you were. You know. So, but to stay on Atlanta sports, okay, we're taking, I give Dan Quinn week six. If this trend keeps on continuing with the Atlanta Falcons, I was being nice. I'm going to be nice and give him to week eight.
Well, again, this is, again, you're talking about the Falcons, losers today to the Tennessee Titans and Marcus Mariota, 24-10 down at Mercedes-Benz. And, yes, we're going to jump into that. And, again, talking about my Twitter feed, and, again, my Twitter, John_Morgo, so you can follow me on that. And a lot of the fans, they are just jumping off the parapets right now. They have hit full. We are in full-blown panic mode, 1-3. The Buccaneers are now 2-2 after an unbelievable game against the LA Rams. And we'll get into that one in a little bit because I watched that whole thing. And the thing about Atlanta, it's the play calling. And this is kind of funny, guys. Last year, it's like, oh, get the ball to Julio. Get the ball to Julio Jones. Get it to Julio. You're not getting it to Julio. Why can't you get it to Julio? This season, it's get the ball to Calvin Ridley. Why can't you get the ball to Calvin Ridley? Get the ball to Calvin Ridley. Julio Jones is getting the ball this season. And it really is kind of a thing where, A, it doesn't matter what you do, the fans are not going to be happy. B, you're losing, so quite naturally the fans are going to be happy. But really, in this ball game, the onus on the as to who's to blame has shifted solely on Dan Quinn. I mean, it is on him squarely. So we're seeing people saying, "Oh, when he's fired, you got to hire Raheem Morris. When he's fired, you got to hire Lincoln Riley. When he's fired, you know." And again, they're 1-3. They have a game with Houston next week before the bye. So, I mean, have we really reached the point of no return with Dan Quinn? And is is that fair to him?
So I think the answer to that is yes. Because at the beginning of the year, Dan Quinn kind of put himself on the hot seat anyway.
Well,
when he fired his coordinators and made himself the defensive coordinator. And since he's been the defensive coordinator, it really hasn't looked all that great for him defensively when you take a look at it. The defense still looks out of place at times. I mean, we can say that the loss of Keanu Neal has affected him, but even before Keanu went down, he went down last week, it still wasn't that way. So this is a struggle. And if people are hitting the panic button, I can see why. Look at the next five games they have. They're at Houston, at Arizona. Arizona, you can probably pick up a win there, but it's tough. But the Falcons have a problem playing at Arizona. Well, then you come back home for the Rams and the Seahawks, and then it's at New Orleans. But at New Orleans, that's after their November 3rd bye week. So that's going to be a tough stretch them here. It would have been nice to start out 4-0 or maybe 2-2 even and get this win. You know, a lot of people thought that Atlanta would pull this out. They're at home. They're in the dome. They're going against a Tennessee team that we're still kind of questioning. They're still questioning if Marcus Mariota is the guy there and maybe switch to Tannehill. Derrick Henry really didn't they really didn't need Derrick Henry because Mariota played well.
Mm-hmm.
If this train continues, and like Leon said, well, it's going to be some hard evaluations on Dan Quinn because I believe coming into the season, I believe he wanted to put this on himself, as it was anyway. And I think this was on him. And if the Falcons don't get to where they need to go, then, yeah, you can say that. Now, is this on Matt Ryan? No, Matt Ryan has thrown 6 interceptions this year. Okay.
Yep.
He's thrown 8 touchdown passes this year. Okay. But he's 5th best in the league in yards. He's actually tied for 5th best in the league in touchdown passes. He does lead the league in interceptions, however. But most of those interceptions, I can say, yeah, half of those interceptions I can say was on him in his decision making. But most of those started up front with his line not protected.
Right, so, and that's always been the issue.
Right. And another thing too, guys, a lot that I saw today, a lot that haunted us for the last 3 or 4 years. I think we have as talented as a defense as possible, but you're only as talented as your tackling.
Mm-hmm.
And their tackling is still an issue. They, at times, Atlanta looked like they were playing two-hand touch. And I was saying it today with my wife. I said, are they playing two-hand touch today? I mean, what's this? Have we switched the rules already? So there's a lot of problems. I think the main concern is Dan Quinn and that defense.
Well, there's no question the offense has to perform better. You can't get 10 points on a team with
That's
a
right.
suspect defense like Tennessee and expect to do something. And again, it's Matt Ryan's playing very well. Yes, but the only problem is his interceptions. But if he's so that's really the issue here. And some of those aren't his fault. Some of those are his fault.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so that has to improve. The interceptions have to come down. The efficiency has to come down. But most importantly, they need to get, we're saying it again, get everybody involved. Yes, Julio Jones got his money, and you are paying him attention, and he is a good receiver. He deserves the attention. But again, now you got to get other people involved, be it Calvin Ridley, be it Mohamed Sanu. Somehow find these people to get the ball, get them touches, and just diversify. And I think that's really the issue here. I just don't think the offense is diverse enough in terms of the play calling. And the play calling has been a problem with this team for the last few years in terms of what they want to do, who they get it to. The play calling has been an issue with them. And, of course, that's easy for us to say. We're not the ones actually in the trenches. We're not the ones actually in there knowing the players, knowing what they're capable of. But the offense has to get out of neutral. They have to get 20, 30 points a ball game. And if you have to get shootouts until the defense figures it out, then that's what you're going to have to do. But the offense is stuck in a rut. And until they figure that out, and again, that's not Dan Quinn. He's letting Dick Cotter take over that. So that's probably the big issue with the Falcons.
Yeah. If this trend continues, then politics is going to have to come into play. Someone's going to take the blame.
Right.
And the public will demand a pound of flesh. And in situations like this, with the exception of Matt Ryan isn't going anywhere. I think he has too much equity.
No, he's not going anywhere. No, he's got the contract.
No, he's not.
Julio Jones isn't going anywhere. Those two are going to be
right.
Falcons for life.
Right. So Dan Quinn's, his flesh will be on the line. And I would say that, there's going to be a difficult 5-game stretch coming forward in which the Falcons have to, look at 1-3 right now. I would say that you got to go at least 4-1 or next 5 games.
Okay.
Got to go at least 4-1. 3-2 at the most, but it's got to be, we got to see like a 4-1 turnaround, or else Dan Quinn will be someone's assistant coach or someone's defensive coordinator.
Probably might go back to Seattle.
And it's not like he can't do it. It's not like it can't be done. I mean, we've seen teams come back from 1-3 and 1-2. I mean, the Falcons were like this a couple of years ago and went to the Super Bowl. So, I mean, it's not like it can't happen, but if you have to look at the schedule as well. And if you compare the schedule, your next 5 games to the first 4 games and to the level that you're playing at, it's hard to see where this Falcons team could win a game. I mean, if you take the first 4 and then take the next 4, it looks eerily similar. They could lose at Houston. They could win that game at Arizona, but lose the next 2 to the Rams and Seahawks.
Right.
I mean, that's 2-8. 2-6, rather. That's 2-6. So, I mean, go ahead, John.
In the last couple of years, the Falcons have not done well at all against the AFC. This is not a team
that... Yeah, 1-12 now. They are 1-12 in that last 13, if you include the Super Bowl against AFC teams.
Right, that one was the Jets last year.
Yes.
So it's got to be a turnout. And from my team's point of view, Melvin Gordon, of course, he said he's going to play. I am a big Melvin Gordon fan, just by default. He's my running back. But I do not like the fact that he held out just not to get paid. That what's the whole point?
Yes.
And, you know, but he didn't play today. And though we got the victory, I didn't see what I wanted to see out of Eckler. You know, averaging 3.3 yards per carry against a real fruitless Miami defense. I mean, I Phillip Rivers did what he's supposed to do. Case Keenum with his 5 catches. You know, but I just didn't. Aaron, he has a ways to go for me. I'm going to need to see Melvin Gordon. I like to see him back in uniform, but at the same time, I like to see that man get his money. You know, I feel he definitely was, you know, was putting up 1,300 yards from scrimmage last year. I mean, you got to give him something. And especially the way we lost to two potential playoff teams with the Detroit Lions, they represented, I'm pretty sure that they will make the playoffs this year based on their plan, but this is the first quarter of the season, so you never know. We've seen teams with free falls. Especially, you know, with that loss they took today against the Chiefs. But, you know, with the loss that we took as well, you know, I need to see more out of Aaron Eckler. And we've seen another quarterback casualty, not just Eli, but Case Keenum will be getting some splinters in the behind in Washington.
Okay.
Am I surprised? No. And I know Case Keenum has to be like, damn, in the words of Too Short, it was all good just a week ago. I mean, this man was in the NFC Championship. You know, had a Ferrari for an offense. They just didn't, they couldn't get past the Eagles. And it's just been all downhill from this man from then on. He got replaced by Kirk Cousins. Now he inherited a 1981 Pinto of a team. And the Washington Redskins, this is, my heart goes out to Case Keenum. You know, the Bills today showed some heart, but they failed.
Yep.
To the Patriots. It was a lot of good games today.
And how about Cleveland? How about Cleveland actually showing people that, hey, listen, we can still play a little bit. We finally got it together.
They dominated Baltimore today. But getting back to Case Keenum and the Redskins, what about Daniel Jones? 2-0 as a starter. Admittedly, Tampa Bay proved that they have some life in them, but Tampa Bay and Washington. So he's now 2-0, so I think that is the end of Eli. I think Eli is definitely gone. He may pop up next year as a backup to somebody, but Eli's days as a starter, I think are over.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Leon.
Yeah, you know, it's just interesting that the Giants, I mean, are now, when looking at Daniel Jones, are you saying that, do you believe, based on his performances in the last couple games, that he will be, does he have the makings of a varsity athlete, in the words of Junior Soprano? You know, well, do you see this man being the quarterback? Is he a 10-year starter? I mean, I know 2 games ahead of us is not, you don't want to become prisoners of the moment, but, you know.
Well, Giants' next game is against Minnesota at home, so we'll know a lot more about that. That's going to be the toughest defense that he's had to face this season.
Yeah. I think that he's poised to be a 10-year starter. The kid exuberates confidence. So I mean, he has tons of it, right? He can do it with his arm. He can do it with his leg if he needs to. And then remember, he really doesn't have the guys that he would want. You know what I'm saying? Like Odell Beckham is not there anymore. You know, he doesn't have him. Saquon Barkley is hurt. So for him to pull out a victory, and yes, it gets a very underachieving Washington Redskins team. Who, by the way, you draft a guy in Dwayne Haskins, and you draft him high. and yet Case Keenum is still your starter. I don't know about that one. I think that this one right here, and if there's anybody whose job is on the line, it's Gruden's job. His job is really, his seat has really become hot as of late. And his seat had been hot probably since the beginning of the year. He's just not really getting it done down there in Washington.
Yeah, you know, Jay Gruden has been really, I mean, he's been there since RG3, and they have done really, I mean, under with Kirk Cousins, I mean, I think they, like a 500 level, like a 500 coach, and, you know, he should be going, I mean, him and Marvin Lewis, I mean, they got like 9 lives when it comes to coaching. And you know, Marvin Lewis, his luck ran out, as we know. But my goodness, I thought Jay Gruden had been out a long time ago. To be honest with you, but you know, stranger things have happened. You know, Jeff Fisher, if we remember him, was a coach. I mean, he was like at one point in time, he was the longest tenured coach in the NFL, with just like I believe 2 playoff appearances. And more than 10 years, 2 playoff appearances in more than 10 years, and kept him a job up until recently. So you know, I think Jay Gruden needs to write him a book. But we need to go off and get on this guy who Rex Ryan, I guess, happened to anger and calling him overrated,
Mr. Baker Mayfield.
Oh, man, this man came out. I mean, they hung 40 on – I mean, everybody's ran the rave about the Ravens. I believe that the Ravens are still legit. And, you know, they took a real – they took a real close loss to the Chiefs, which I believe they showed some heart. It just, you know, the Chiefs just had too much firepower for them. But I thought for sure they were going to kind of beat – I thought they were going to beat the Browns. I'm not going to lie to you. I thought they were going to take them out. And Rex Ryan will be – laughing like Roger Dangerfield on stage as Baker Mayfield along, you know, but it just, you know, Baker Mayfield and the Cleveland Browns along with Nick Chubb, you know, didn't, I guess they have something to say about that, but an asterisk on their victory is the fact that they did that without Odell Beckham.
Right.
And so, I mean, this man only had like one catch for like 4 yards or something like that.
One other thing, guys, I do want to mention today. Something that I got from the Chiefs and Lions games. Number one, Kansas City is going to be there at the end of the day. I think we already knew that. And Pat Mahomes is really showing people that last year was just no fluke. I mean, there's a guy who's doing this without Tyreek Hill and, of course, Kareem Hunt, who's with Cleveland now and suspended. But he is really just a tremendous player. But also, let's give for credit where credit is. Detroit might be pretty good. I'm not going to say that they're going to make the playoffs, but they might be pretty good. They hung in there with Kansas City today. I think the defense probably has to tighten up just a little bit. But you got Matthew Stafford who can still throw the football around. So Detroit, they're going to make the NFC North pretty darn interesting this year. So watch out for the Lions, man. That's just my assessment from week 4. As far as the Lions are concerned.
Well, they're going to have to deal with the Bears. The Bears defense, the Vikings. I don't know if they have played
Bears put on a clinic today.
Yeah, I don't know if they've played any divisional opponents as of yet. I mean, they're halfway through their AFC slate. I think they still have to go to Oakland and Denver because because LA Chargers and Kansas City were in Detroit. So I think they have to go. That means they have to go to Oakland and Denver. But again, they haven't played any of their division. They still got that tie with Arizona on their record, and that could help them or hurt them, depending on how things go with the tiebreakers. But they're in a tough division, and we'll just wait to see what happens when they finally get into divisional play. I don't think it's next week, because let's see, Chicago's got the Raiders in London, and we already mentioned Minnesota getting the Giants, and I don't remember where Green Bay is off the top of my head. I'll have to double check on that. So, like I said, I'll hold off on the Lions until we get into divisional play.
It sounds kind of weird Detroit and good in the same sentence.
I mean, they've had the athletes. They just couldn't put them all. They just for all the talent that Detroit has had, it is a shame that they just can't seem to put it all together and have a good season, have a playoff bound season.
Right. And yeah, I still maintain. I always thought that Matthew Stafford is a little overrated.
I always thought so, too. It looks like Detroit is off next week. Green Bay's got Dallas. Green Bay's at Dallas. So we'll have Cleveland, again, will be Monday night against San Francisco. So you figure in the first 5 weeks, the Browns are Monday night twice and Sunday night once. And I think...
Yeah.
So everyone...
But the league has been waiting for that, though.
Everybody's going all in on the Browns.
Been waiting for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, the league has been waiting for that. And next Sunday night is the Colts and the Chiefs.
Yeah, that'll be a good one.
I'm looking at the Sunday night game now. But yeah, of course. Everybody had been waiting for Cleveland to come back because Cleveland is, I guess, NFL football. I don't know.
Right.
But, you know,
well,
they needed to make that run. Go ahead.
Well, everyone wants to anoint Baker Mayfield as the next young star. Him, Patrick Mahomes, Dak Prescott in some instances, just trying to anoint the next young star who can get his cover on Madden and then have his career derailed after that.
Yeah, absolutely.
The NFL is definitely looking bright.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of young emerging talent. A lot of guys are on the way out. I'm anxious to see how Terry Bridgewater performs tonight against Dallas. You know, see the same thing, you know, really make it interesting to see if they could maybe even, you know, put an L against Dallas' record. I think that'd be huge. Today as well, you know, and I've seen Jameis Winston, you know, put up a college football score against a pro team today. That was very impressive.
Yes, he led the Buccaneers to a 55-40. There was a late touchdown. 55-40 win over the Rams. Jared Goff throws for 517 yards. That's a career high for him. The only problem, he throws for three picks. And those three picks really hurt him. And Jameis Winston had a great game. I don't think he got up to 500. I think he got to like 430, 440, somewhere in that vicinity. And that 55 points, that's a franchise record. Never scored that many before in their history.
Right. So, that's saying a lot. You're talking about a Tampa Bay team that are champions.
And although the
he threw for 385, four touchdowns and a pick,
pick six late in the game.
But
those three picks that Jared Goff threw, those led directly to touchdowns because in that first half, they couldn't stop him. I believe Chris Godwin had three touchdowns as well. And they just carved up the Rams' defense in that first quarter, and that's something Wade Phillips, he's got to look back, and he's got to get to the drawing board in the room, in the film room, and he's got to tighten up some coverage, because if Jameis Winston can do that, you better believe that Jimmy Garoppolo in San Francisco, he's licking his chops. He can't wait to go face them, Russell Wilson. And again, it's going to be a short week for the Rams because they will play Seattle on Thursday night in the Pacific Northwest. So I think we finally, after 4 weeks, have a Thursday night game worth its time slot.
Yeah, absolutely. That Eagles Packers game was good, too. So.
Yeah, that was good, too. That was good, too. That was good, too.
Yeah, that was a great game.
Mm-hmm. All right, we got about 10 minutes left in this edition of The Last Three Guys Do a Podcast. And before we wrap ourselves up, interesting note, tomorrow NBA camps open up. So, Leon, what do you want to see from your Lakers in the first week of camp?
Cohesion. I want to see if we can make it work. You know, quarterback slash point guard with Rajon Rondo, him not being, you know, Rajon Rondo, in my opinion, represents not quite as good of a jump shot, not quite, not even close to being a good jump shot, Derek Fisher. Let's be honest. But at the same time, he does what I need for him to do as being a point guard. Rajon Rondo is going pretty much going to get the ball past half court and pass to LeBron James. The same way that Derek Fisher to get the ball past half court and pass it to Kobe Bryant, we need him to get the ball to past half court and pass to LeBron James, and LeBron James, and then we'll make it happen. He'll get the ball to the right person, but especially if it's Anthony Davis. I'd like to see Dwight Howard, you know, if he could give us 12 and 15, that would be beautiful. You know, we have Danny Green, proven shooting guard, more than competent defender, defending champion as of late, also gave LeBron plenty of heckery during his days with the Spurs. So I like the way we're looking. I'm hoping upon hope that maybe the buyout situation that is the Memphis Grizzlies and Andre Iguodala can happen in the Lakers' favor. I mean, maybe I'm asking too much, but that would just be beautiful. You know, and, you know, I just, you know, like I said, cohesion. That's all I want to say at the Lakers. You know, we can take all these pieces and make it work.
Well, again, so good thing that the NBA camps are opening up. Midnight Madness, college basketball, that's getting started as well. So everything in terms of the fall winter sports happening as well. NHL, their opening night is Wednesday with a couple of games. We'll talk about that probably in a couple other instances. And another thing, guys, before we go into our last 60 seconds, the Atlanta Braves. They won the NL East, but they're kind of limping into the postseason, having lost three straight to the Mets, one in their last six. Did the Braves just kind of put it in neutral for these last six games? Can they basically turn it back on when the postseason arrives and they find out who they play? I think they play St. Louis in the NL Divisional Series. And that's going to be that's going to be a lot of subplots in that one. Last time these two teams met in the postseason infield fly roll. So can the Braves turn it back on, or did they in fact coast? Were they not even trying these last couple of games?
I don't think they were trying, John. I'm just going to be honest with you. I mean, for a team that talented, they pulled Acuna out because Acuna was. I think he had a hip injury. Mm-hmm. So I think they sat him down for a little while. They're trying to get Marquez back healthy, trying to get him back into the swing of it. He'll be back 100%. Listen, it's going to be tough to beat this Atlanta Braves team, especially at the rate that they're hitting. They can out-hit anybody in the league, probably other than the Yankees.
Okay.
They are really, really good. I think the main concern, and it's probably a main concern. It's funny because it's probably a main concern with all teams that are left standing in the National League, including the Nationals.
Right.
The bullpen. It's the bullpen, man. That middle relief pitching. There are going to be times now where your starting pitcher, not your ace, not your 1 and 2. Your 1 and 2 is going to probably go 8 innings. It's probably going to have to go 8 innings.
Right,
and you would trust them to go that in, but you get to that 3 and 4 starter. That 3 and 4 is probably going to have to go maybe 4 or 5 innings, and now you got to pitch that way home. And we really don't have a legit closer. I think they've been using closing by committee, so that's probably going to be one of the main questions marks that I think everybody has, and it is kind of funny to see that. Because, listen, the ball has been flying out.
Right.
I think they broke the record again for most home runs in the season. I think Major League Baseball in itself broke the record again for like the fifth or sixth straight year. So the ball is flying out of there. And if it's a team that wants to take advantage of that, that's the Atlanta Braves. Now, they got a tough one coming. St. Louis, I think they can't give St. Louis any opportunity to beat them in a series. I think they have to win the first two in Atlanta.
Yes.
Get those two out of the way. Possibly get a game. Possibly have St. Louis is possibly going to get a game there, but then you got to finish them off when you head to the NLCS, where either the Dodgers, and I think a lot of people are thinking that the Dodgers are waiting for them. The Dodgers are going to have the winner of the Nationals and Brewers game. And those two teams are very dangerous. I mean, when you look at them, they are a team that could beat any of those three divisional winning teams. Both of those teams can. And even with the Brewers, their best player is not there. Christian Yelich is not there.
Right.
He's out for the year. So, but they still are playing with the tenacity that you need to play with in October. Man, this, I'm telling you, folks, this is going to be a fun October this year. And a lot of people are saying, no, the usual suspects. It might be the Dodgers, the Yankees. Listen, this thing is open. This thing is wide open because the Houston Astros are back in the postseason as well. So this is going to be good. I think we get it kicked off Wednesday, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, the aren't the wild card games Monday or Monday and Tuesday, or are they Wednesday as well?
No, the Nationals and Brewers play Wednesday. I'm not sure when Oakland and Tampa Bay plays.
Okay.
I think they play Tuesday. They probably do.
All right, so we're gonna have the day off while everyone travels, and then go Tuesday. Hopefully, guys, in terms of everything else that's going on, you know, NBA and NFL, college, we will still be able to hang on to and talk about what's going on in the Major League Baseball postseason.
Let me correct myself on that one. Tuesday it does start. It will be Milwaukee at Washington.
Okay.
And then Wednesday will be Tampa Bay at Oakland.
All times are at
8 o'clock. Yep. National League Wild Card game will be on TBS, and the American League Wild Card game will be on ESPN.
And I guarantee you all games will be 4 hours, and people will start complaining about that probably by the weekend.
Yeah, and they really shouldn't complain about it because it's postseason baseball.
Right. All right, that's going to – we're here, the last three guys to do a podcast. We're talking baseball. We're talking football. We're talking NBA. I really don't have anything for the last 60 seconds, so I will defer to my co-host, Daniel and Leon. Anything you guys want to get off your chests in our last few moments?
Well, I'd like to get on my team as far as the Chargers is concerned. Like I said, I'm a big fan of my team. I like to see my team do well. This right here, what I'm witnessing, is the worst holdout since Vincent Jackson held out on us and ultimately left us for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers back in 2009. But this time with Melvin Gordon, you know, I would like to see Melvin Gordon back on the field. But I also have to see the Chargers do right by Melvin Gordon. You know, you've got to compensate people. And I wanted to see, I don't believe that he's Ezekiel Elliott. He's not the best running back in the league. Okay?
Right.
But he is almost as important as Ezekiel Elliott is to the Cowboys as he is to us.
Right.
And it's been evident over the it's been evident over the past two games. You know, those losses could have been avoided. So, you know, especially the loss that we took against Detroit, that stung me because we lost that ball at the goal line because our backup running back fumbled the football. You know, so we got the Lord of No Rings, who was AJ Smith.
Mm-hmm.
We got him up out of there. So we got to learn the lessons from the past, and we got to do right by this man so we can go off and get back to the winning trend, because the Chiefs aren't going anywhere. These guys are a real problem.
Right.
I got uncles in Kansas City, so I'm going to hear about that, and I don't want to hear about that. So to my team, the Chargers, let's get together, man.
Okay.
That's me.
All right, Daniel.
All right. So last night, I know, guys, we were in Kennesaw for the Kennesaw State and Reinhardt games. You guys were just joining us. Great game. But there was something else that also happened last night. There was a big-time boxing match that happened between Errol Spence and Sean Porter for the welterweight championship. Errol Spence won that fight by split decision. And before that, he actually came out, before this fight happened, he actually came out and said, that he's eyeing Bud Crawford, who was also a title holder, and Manny Pacquiao. Now, there's been sources in from Manny's camp saying that they don't know if they want that spin fight. Manny Pacquiao's 40 years old.
Right.
Don't know if he can handle a young stud quite like Errol Spence. But I'm going to tell you, I saw the highlights of that match, and that was a potential fight of the year, guys. I mean, Sean Porter just didn't lay down, and whoever the judge was that had Porter winning that fight, I can see why. Porter was landing a lot of hard shots on Errol Spence. Now, Spence dropped Porter in the 11th round, but man, that Sean Porter is a tough cat, man. In my honest opinion, I think that if I had to choose between Bud Crawford and Manny Pacquiao for Errol Spence, because, I mean, if he wants to unify the titles, he's got to go through Bud. And if he's got to fight Pacquiao as well, I think he might have to go up or down one. He has to do either one. But if he wants to run the welterweight division, I think the big money fight, and we're talking about money here because, you know, we have to talk about money and politics and camps and this, that, and the fourth. Boxing has just become a big money pot right now. But if you want to talk about that, the Bud Crawford Errol Spence fight is going to be a huge money-making fight. So I'm endorsing it. I'm endorsing Terrence Bud Crawford versus Errol Spence. I don't know when you're going to do it. They'll probably do it around the time the Kentucky Derby happens. So I'm endorsing that fight. Do it in Vegas, you know, because Errol Spence likes to fight in Texas. That's, I think that's his hometown. But do it in Vegas.
Yeah.
Do it where the money is. Invite the last three guys to do a podcast out there.
Oh, yeah, we'll be there. Stay at my parents' house. Pet my dog.
Yeah, we'll be there definitely. So if my honest opinion, I think Errol Spence and Bud Crawford should be the next fight. If I'm Sean Porter, Porter can basically pick anything. I would have said Keith Thurman, but Keith Thurman has a setback again with his hand injury. I would have said that would have been a part two that I think a lot of people would have seen. I've heard Danny Garcia. I've heard Mikey Garcia's name come up. But I want to see Errol Spence, Bud Crawford. And that's my last 3 minutes.
All right. Thanks a lot, Daniel. Leon. All right. That's going to wrap it up for this edition of The Last Three Guys Do a Podcast. John Morgo here. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll be with you next week. Hopefully, we'll be talking some college basketball. Hopefully, we'll be together. Depends on, you know, what happens on my overtime anyway. Thank you very much for joining us. Rate us. Give us comments. Whatever you need to do. But just tell the world about The Last Three Guys Do a Podcast. It'll be our 50th episode next week. So we'll look back on our previous year, giving you the best of our opinions. So thank you so much, and we'll see you next week. This has been The Last Three Guys Do a Podcast. Have a good night, everybody.